Good morning, Church of Glenshaw Valley. Luke has recorded in chapter 15 three of Jesus' parables that were in response to the Pharisees and the teachers of the law deriding Jesus for showing grace and favor to sinners by spending time with them and eating with them. The three parables told by Jesus illustrates that God does not take pleasure in the ruin and the spiritual death of sinners, but rejoices when a sinner repents and comes home to him. This parable of the lost son revealed the magnitude of God's grace and love for all mankind. So please listen to your own personal message as I read Luke 15, 11 through 32. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had and set off for a distant country and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything there, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion, for he ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older son became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeying your orders. You never gave me even a young goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found.'" Bless the reading and hearing of our scripture.
Thank you, Bill. Welcome to the final week and sermon of the 30-day challenge. The objective of a 30-day challenge has been for each of us to discover and engage in the five purposes of the church. We've been learning how we can take big steps towards reaching our God-given potential, and we've been strengthening, hopefully, our relationship with God and also with one another. Each week, I've encouraged you to embrace these challenges so that you can experience the love and joy and peace and fellowship and fulfillment that comes from doing God's will for your life. We also said that at the end of the 30 days, we wanted a transformation in our thinking about the church, not just viewing it as a place to come to, but realizing that it is a vibrant family to belong to. We want to become the church. A community of faith, powerful, inspirational, and transformational, touching our community with the power of the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. The inspiration for each of these challenges has come out of the description of the first church in Acts chapter 2, starting in verse 42, that you can go back and read. But for this morning, it says, "And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved." There was a magnetism of the church because of their devotion, their unity, and also their generosity. But no one would know about these things unless the members of the early church were talking about it to their friends who were outside of the church. So I want to talk to you today about the fifth purpose of the church, outreach. Some people would call it evangelism. So I've titled the message, Lost and Found. Mostly, I want to show you today why reaching your relational world, and when I use that word, relational world, I mean those people that you are coming in contact with, those that you work with, your neighbors, your family, everyone that you have a relationship with, whether close or just maybe as an acquaintance. Luke 15 contains three parables. The stories of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the wayward son. The first story is about a shepherd who loves his sheep. The literal Greek reads, "Which of you being a shepherd of a hundred sheep and loses one of them?" Ask that question. This could be so immediate trigger of Jesus' original audience because in the Middle Eastern culture, saving face, as we talked about last week, was so very, very important. The answer to this question, which of you as a shepherd loses one of your sheep, has to be none of us. No good shepherd would ever lose a sheep. A sheep might wander off, but he would never be so careless as just to lose a sheep. This is a story about a shepherd like none that they had imagined. The shepherd has 100 sheep. He leaves the other 99 out in the open country. He doesn't bring them back to the city and corral them for the night. He leaves them in potential danger to go out and to find the one sheep that is lost. When he finds the sheep, he puts it on his shoulder, brings it home, and what does he do? He throws a party. "Rejoice with me," he says to his friends. "I found what I lost." The second story starts with the same hypothetical. Suppose one of you. The literal translation would be, "What woman among you having 10 coins and loses one of them?" Again, to save face, the answer has to be none of us. No woman in a Middle Eastern village would ever lose a coin. They were just way too valuable. Too rare, too valuable, especially in a farming culture. Most exchanges were done with barter whenever possible. Coins weren't used all that much like in our society today. Even we're getting away from it. Cash was only used for emergencies to make purchases that could be made in no other way. The woman had 10 coins, and scholars believe that this was probably her dowry. And she would make jewelry out of them, wearing them around their neck for safekeeping. The lost coin is so precious that she scours the house, looks everywhere until she finds the lost coin. When she finds it, she calls her friends to a party and she says, "Rejoice with me. I found what I lost." The woman Jesus is describing is like no woman that they had previously known. Jesus then tells them the third story, the story of the prodigal son. As the story progresses, you'll see what it's really the story of a father. The father who is like no Middle Eastern father before or after him. The story begins in verse 11 with, "There was a man who had two sons. The prodigal son asked his father to divide the inheritance. The son takes his share to the estate, moves to a foreign country where he squanders his wealth and wild living. He returns home and is welcomed back into the family in a very surprising way." That's the way we hear it with Western ears, and it just kind of goes over our head. We really don't pay all that much attention to it. But let me show you it through Middle Eastern eyes and ears. The story opens with, "Divide your inheritance so that I can have my share of the estate." To everyone's amazement, the father does. It's real important to know that what the son did was not ever done. Ever. And tantamount to him saying to his father, "Father, I wish you were dead." The next words are, "Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth on wild living." Notice that he didn't leave immediately. It says, "Not long after that." It's very important. He had to liquidate his inheritance. He had to find a buyer for each item in his inheritance. His portion of the family jewelry. His portion of the family livestock. His portion of the family lands. Whatever was being given to him, he had to take it and go into the village and find people to purchase this so he could have his coins, his cash, and be able to leave and go to another country away from everyone, just wanting to get away from everything that he knew and everyone. And the only people he could sell to were the people in the village. So as Jesus is telling the story, his listeners were imagining this brash young man going from door to door, trying to convince people who knew his father to buy a portion of his father's property. When every person behind every door knew this boy had insulted his father and shamed his family by wishing in a roundabout way that his father was dead. He's drawn disgrace on the village too. Now he has done the unthinkable, selling off property and possessions that had been in the family for generations. As the scorn mounts, the son feels more and more pressure now to get out of town. "I've got this started. I got to get away from here before something happens to me." So he leaves as soon as he sold the last of his possessions. By now, the villagers are openly antagonistic towards him. There's been talk about shunning him or publicly shaming him, maybe even beating him, doing something to this upstart, young, insolent man. As soon as all the transactions are completed, the son heads for a faraway country. It's in the faraway country that his wayward son gradually descends into his own personal hell on earth. The text said he squandered his wealth in wild living. He wasted it in plain sight of the citizens of this faraway country who themselves are Middle Easterners. They too are unimpressed with this frivolous young man who had come into town rather rich, but is now broke. And the polite way a Middle Eastern gets rid of an unwanted hanger-on, and I'm sure he was trying to get drinks and place to sleep and money from people he really did not even know. It's not to come out and tell them to go home, it's to assign them a task that they really don't want to do. So when the son asks for a job, one of the citizens offers to give him a job as a pig herder. It's a job he cannot accept. Pigs are unclean animals to the law of Moses and for a Jewish person. And they have to feed 7 days a week, which meant that he could not keep the Sabbath. To everyone's surprise, his son accepts the job, but it's a horrible, terrible job and doesn't pay well enough to even keep the hunger away. It's this hole of self-pity begins to think honestly for the first time about himself and about his life and the situation that he's got himself into. He knows there's no life for him in this foreign land, yet he cannot go home to his father because he's insulted him and he has shamed him. He's a failure. He has nothing to offer, nothing to give when he comes back, because sons are supposed to provide for their fathers in the old age, not the other way around. But now he begins to think very creatively. He realizes that he can't go back home and ask to live in the family house as a son, but maybe he can go home and ask to be hired as a servant. He devises a plan. I'll go home. I'll admit that I was a fool. And instead of asking to be reinstated as a son, I'll ask my father to hire me as a servant. The two problems with the plan are, will his father really accept him back? And after he is publicly humiliated, insulted, and shamed him in front of his family and the whole village, how will they receive him? Remember how the villagers felt about him when he left. He had disgraced them all by his shameful behavior. And add to the fact that he lost all the money to the despised Gentiles. And the prodigal has no solution for placating the villagers when he gets home. He will simply have to endure their shaming as he walks the way into town. This gauntlet, because people are going to know he's coming, and they're going to want to come out and see this young man. But to the father's house he goes. And this is where the father's story comes into full force. The father, because of his experience, knows two things. First, he knows that his immature, impulsive son is bound to fail one day. He knows that if his son ever does come home, it will probably not be as a successful, rich businessman, but more likely as a beggar. The second thing the father knows is that the villagers will not treat him well at all. Since his departure, all the townspeople have told him openly and repeatedly that he should not have granted the inheritance in the first place. It wasn't a smart thing for him to have done, and that his son is a rascal and deserves nothing short of death. He knows that if the son ever does return, the first person who sees him will pass the word, and that a crowd will gather and likely mock him, spit on him, maybe even throw rocks at him, maybe even kill him. You just don't know. He knows that the son, in order to get home, will have to endure the scorn of the crowd every step he takes through the village. The father knows this, and what he does in anticipation of the son's return is nothing short of amazing. When the son returns, the father does five things that would be considered outrageous in Middle Eastern society. The first thing he does is he runs. When word comes to him that his son has been out on the outskirts of the village, the father runs to him. Instead of letting his son run the gauntlet, the father runs the gauntlet for him. It's an outrageous thing because a nobleman would not run. It's just something that did not happen. He takes his robes, he pulls them up, his ankles are exposed, and he runs out to greet his son, where everyone can see him do it. Aristotle, the Greek philosopher, said, "Great men never run in public, but the father does." And Jesus explains why. He says, "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him." As the father runs through the village, he knows he's creating a spectacle. He knows that he's drawing a crowd. He knows that we'll talk about him and he can be humiliated for the rest of his life. But he cares more about his son than he does about his own reputation. And imagine just for a moment from the son's perspective. He knows that to get to his father, he has to go into town and that the town hates him. He knows that there's no way he can get to the father without enduring all this scorn and humiliation, but he has to get to the father in order to become the servant. So he sets his jaw and he walks the last few miles towards the town. Sure enough, at the first sighting of the outskirts of the village, word starts spreading. People are going together. He's about to endure the worst moments of his life. As he comes to the edge of the village, he expects to see rocks and jeers and angry faces. Instead, what he sees coming towards him is his father running towards him with his robe pulled up to his ankles. And to his utter, happy amazement, rather than experiencing the ruthless hostility that he deserves for what he'd done, he finds a visible demonstration of the love of the Father. The second thing the Father does is kisses his son. The text says he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. They're embracing eye to eye, shoulder to shoulder, In his mind, the son has pictured himself coming home and humbling himself. He's rehearsed this scene over many times in his mind. First he kisses his father's hand, then he kneels down and kisses his father's feet in humiliation, humbling himself. But the father won't let him. The father keeps holding on to him and kissing him all over his face. Now back in the faraway land, the son planned his reunion speech with his father. In verse 19, he says, "I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.'" Admit his guilt, ask to become a servant in his father's household. Now look at actual speech as the father is holding him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be your son." What's missing from the speech? What's missing is his request to become a servant. And why is it missing? Because he cannot carry out his plan. His father will not let go. His father will not stop kissing him. He cannot humble himself and get on his knees and kiss his father's feet. His plan was to earn his way back into the father's favor. He never intended to ask his father to accept him back just as he would. How could he do that? The third thing the father does is call for a robe to put on his son. And who owned the best robe in the family? The father. The father and son are still standing on the edge of the village. And the father wants the whole village to know that he has accepted his son. So he sends his servants to get his own best robe so the son can wear it as they walk through the village. The fourth thing the father does is call for a ring and sandals. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. The ring is probably a signet ring, which would mean he has authority in the family to conduct business. You dip it and you make the mark, which means the son is a trusted, empowered member of the family, immediately taken back in to the family. And the sandals are a sign that he is a free man. He's not going to be a servant, because the servants, the slaves at that time, walked barefoot. And finally, the father says, "Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Bring it here. Let's bring it to the village. Let's celebrate and let's rejoice. Not at home, in secret, in private, in shame. Let's bring it out here now and do it together." He's invited the whole village to share in his joy and his excitement and his love. He doesn't want the son only to be reconciled to him. He wants his son to be reconciled to the entire village. He wants everyone to have a relationship with his son. This is a story that no one could have anticipated. When the son is found, the father throws the mother of all parties to celebrate his reunion. Those are the three stories, and each one of them, something goes missing. And everything that's missing matters. The sheep matters to the shepherd, the coin matters to the woman, and the son matters to the father. And what matters causes and warrants an intentional search. Reclamation brings rejoicing. The shepherd, the woman, and the father all rejoice and all throw a party. Do you see what Jesus is saying here? He's saying missing things matter enough to warrant an intentional search. Find everyone who's missing and bring them to me. We've experienced firsthand being lost and then found, being shown undeserved love, acceptance, and forgiveness. So we are compelled by our Heavenly Father to bring the missing to Him. We as a church are called to reach out to the lost and the missing. Something historically Presbyterians have not been very good at. We've had this idea that let's build a building, set it somewhere, let them come to us. That's not what the Word of God teaches. Yes, have a building, have a place, do all this, but then reach out, touch people's lives, and bring them in. That's what God requires of us. So I'm going to ask you if this week, if you can pray this prayer. God, give me your heart for the lost. Not God, give me a heart for the lost, but God, give me your heart for the lost. And if you can think about inviting a friend to the church, might change their lives. And if you can share your faith with someone, tell them why you're a Christian and why you love Jesus and why you believe in God. Doesn't have to be heavy theological, just what God has done for you. Think about not just your salvation, but those that are in the world that are hurting and need God in their lives. May God bless you. Amen.